Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star and one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Nathan Ball. Sir, you may go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and I want to welcome all of our participants. My name is Nathan Ball. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, and I'm the moderator for today's call. Our topic today is RHC billing, and our speakers are Sharon Chambers. She's the Director of Provider Solutions at the South Carolina Office of Rural Health, and Janet Litton is the Director of Reimbursement at RHD Incorporated. This series is sponsored by HRSA's Federal Office of Rural Health Policy and is in conjunction with the National Association of Rural Health Clinics. We are supported by a cooperative agreement, as you can see on your screen, through the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, and that allows us to bring you these calls for free. Purpose of the series is to provide RHC staff with valuable technical assistance and RHC-specific information. It's our 80th call in the series, which began in 2004. And during that time, we've had over 21,000 combined participants on the teleconference calls that are now being done as webinars. As you know, there's no charge to participate in the call series, in the webinar series, so we encourage you to refer others who might benefit from this information to sign up to receive announcements regarding dates, topics, and speakers' presentations at hrsa.gov/ruralhealth/policy/conference/conf/call. If you just look around on the HRSA website, you'll see where you can sign up to receive the announcements. During the Q&A period, we try to get callers to provide their name and their city and state before asking their question, just as a nice touch to see where everyone's calling in from. You can also, we're going to open it up when the Q&A session occurs, the chat box, for those of you that are on the webinar. In the future, if you have any sort of suggestions for RHC topics, RHCTA topics, you can email those topic ideas and questions to bf@narhc.org and put RHCTA question in the subject line. All questions and answers will be posted at the Office of Rural Health Policy Conference Call Series website and the NARHC website, which is, for those of you who don't know, our website is www.narhc.org. Now, before I turn it over to Shannon, I know that our webinar limit was reached, I think about 1:58. So for those of you who are solely on the phone, if you go to RHI Hub and do a quick search, go to there's a search box in the top right, and you search RHC Technical Assistance. There will be a link, I think it's the second link, and it'll take you to, it'll say Rural Health Clinics Technical Assistance Series, and the slides are there for you to download. So you're going to have to follow along and switch the slides on your own, but at least you'll be able to see what everyone's looking at. So, yes, again, that's RHI Hub. And then use the search tool. That's the best way to find it. Type in Rural Health Clinic or RHC Technical Assistance Series, and that should give you a result that leads you to the slides. So with that, I will say those slides are a little outdated, and they might be different from the webinar slides, but they're better than nothing. With that, I'm going to turn it over to you, our first speaker, Shannon Chambers. Shannon?
Thanks, Nathan. Hi, my name is Shannon Chambers. I'm with the South Carolina Office of Rural Health. I am the Director of Provider Solutions, so I'm responsible for the almost 100 rural health clinics here in South Carolina. Janet and I will be presenting today, of course, as a billing overview, and again, the questions at the end we'll be glad to take. Janet, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Shannon. I'm Janet Litton. I've worked with Rural Health Development for the last almost 30 years, and have worked with both provider-based and independent across the country and actually do billing consultation and cost reports for the independents. So with that, we can get our session started, Shannon.
Okay. So, for RHC services, an RHC encounter is defined as a medically necessary face-to-face one-on-one medical or mental health visit or a qualified preventative health visit with an RHC practitioner during which time one or more RHC services are rendered. What I've provided for you in the slides is a great download from CMS that defines the information for you. So, claim submission information. Of course, for your rural health clinic claims, they are billed to Medicare Part A, and they are submitted on a UB04 claim form. So the different revenue codes as part of your billing responsibilities, of course, the 521 is your clinic visit, and that's the main one that I think we see mostly across all of our rural health clinics here in South Carolina. We do have some, of course, when we are on-site doing our visits at our nursing homes, so I've provided those for you as well. Of course, we all know those are, for the rural health clinic visits, it's face-to-face with a provider at the office, their home, or the scene of an accident. So I've provided all of those revenue codes here for you. Again, making sure that for your nursing facility, the difference of the 524 revenue code versus the 525 revenue code is depending on if it's a Part A stay or not. Additional revenue codes that I've provided for you are the telehealth one, which is revenue code 780, and mental health services, which is revenue code 900. Additional revenue codes, since our rules changed a little bit and now we have to submit all information on our claim, we went ahead and gave you the additional revenue codes, which are most commonly used. 250, of course, for our pharmacy codes, but again, they do not need the HCPCS. And then the revenue code 300 for venipuncture, which if you've been paying attention to the listserv lately, you'll see that it appeared there was a MAC that had a problem with claims processing with the venipuncture, which was listed on their frequently asked questions. And then we have our 636, which is our injection and immunizations. So our bill types, our RHC claims typically have the four types of bills. Our 710, which is a non-payment, a zero claim. So you can submit that knowing that that claim will be a zero pay or a zero claim. And then your 711, which is your original claim, the first time you submit that claim. 717 is, of course, your adjustment claim. It's the replacement of a prior claim. So if you submitted something in error and should not have submitted it, you can file a 717 bill type with that original claim number and get an adjustment claim processed. Or if you realize maybe you submitted a claim on the wrong patient, you can file with a claim bill type, or excuse me, a bill type of 718, and that will be a canceled claim. So, RHC requirements, which I referenced a minute ago, beginning October of 2016, we have to add modifier CG to the line with all the charges subject to the coinsurance and deductible. The exception here, of course, is our IPPE. Those do not require you to file the CG modifier, and the claim will still process at your all-inclusive rate. RHCs are required to bill the appropriate HCPCS codes for each line along with the correct revenue code, which we referenced a little bit earlier, on each claim. Okay, so they back in April 2016, we were provided a list of qualified visits, or a QVL. With that list, it merely was a guide to provide us with some examples of additional procedure codes that would be payable other than an actual office visit, such as a 99212, 213, et cetera. It does not mean that that is an all-inclusive list, and it does not mean if that claim or that procedure code is not on that list that it is not a billable RHC claim. There's been a lot of confusion with that, and we wanted to make sure that we clarified that. It was, again, not an all-inclusive list. It was merely a guide to get you with additional services that are part of your rural health clinic and would pay at your all-inclusive rate. So for your claim examples, the one that this one, again, is showing you a 99214, of course, with our CG modifier. It's the only revenue code. You see the 521, so this is my clinic services. And this would be, of course, for just the office visit only that we did that day. All right, so here's an additional. Wanted to try to give you a few different examples. So here's our additional office visit. Again, we had a 99213, and then we also did a procedure that day. So with this, what we're showing is that the original office visit, the 99213, was a $175 charge. The procedure was a $100 charge. So on that top line, because the dollar amount still rolls up into that top line claim, the dollar amount of this charge or for that claim for that top line was $275. With that said, on the bottom of the claim, when you're reviewing your UB, you're going to see a charge that says $375 because, again, it takes the information and rolls it up into that top line, which is what Medicare looks at to process your claim. And then the total claim actually then adds all the lines back down the side. I've given you another example here with an injection. Again, it's a 99213 at $175 charge with the Toradol injection of $20, which made my total claim line for number one as $195. I wanted to make sure we provided you some examples. Okay, so procedures. With the EKGs, and Janet's going to talk to you today about the billing for the difference of your independent labs as well as provider-based, so she'll go into some of the detail with this, but we wanted to give you some additional information. So for your EKGs, we need to make sure that we are splitting those EKGs out. Your all-inclusive code for the EKGs is 93000. That breaks down, of course, to our professional and our technical components, which we've listed there for you, the 93005 and 93010. Our 93005 should be billed to Part B, whether, and Janet will talk a little more about that shortly, whether that's you're an independent and you're billing that under your numbers or you're provider-based and billing it under your hospital numbers. And then the 93010 should be billed to Part A along with your office visit charge for that day. X-rays, again, are handled the exact same way. The technical goes to Part B, and your professional goes to Part A. You want to make sure that your charges, so your 93000, if it's $100, you want to make sure that the 93005 and the 93010 equal that same dollar amount, that we're not charging more when we split that charge out versus maybe that we bill that to a commercial carrier. So if we bill $100 for the 93000 to Blue Cross Blue Shield. Again, we want to make sure that we're billing Medicare $100 as well for those two breakdown of those charges. So here's an example for your EKG charges. Again, your office visit of a 99213, $175, and then the EKG charge of $50. Again, we roll up that charge to that top line, and again, the charge is $225. The total amount of that claim is actually going to look like $275. Preventative services. So preventative services can be standalone visits or they can be billed with another visit. The link that I've provided you there is a list of all of the preventative services in a great little handout. We actually encourage people to print that out and keep that with them, and you'll be able to see and go through all of it. Again, remember, when you're doing preventative services, there are some that pay at your all-inclusive rate, and then there's some that can't be billed on the same day, which we're going to kind of talk through, so I kind of pulled some out for you. So here's your deductible and coinsurance that are waived, just a snapshot of some charges, some preventative services that are done where your deductible and coinsurance are waived for those. Okay, so on that download or that link that I provided for you, it actually has across the information if it's paid at your all-inclusive rate, and then if it's eligible for same-day billing. So here you'll see is the initial preventative, and you'll see that, of course, it's eligible for same-day billing, meaning that if we had a sick visit as well as a well visit that day, that there's reimbursement for two eligible for the same-day billing, and then, of course, the coinsurance deductible applied is waived. Here's your annual wellness visits, and you'll see that, again, eligible for same-day billing is no. Your coinsurance deductible applied is waived, and, again, it's paid at your all-inclusive rate. And then additional screenings, trying to make sure that we pointed those out for you. We use that list a lot and encourage people to have it so that they can kind of see and go through that process. Here's the, you know, the screenings for your PAP and then your pelvic and breast screening for your cancer as well. Here's an example of the services on a claim for you with a 99214 and then our screening and how that's rolled all the way through with the additional claim information. Okay, so two visits on the same day. So again, if their patient comes in and we see them in the morning for cough, cold, congestion, and then we see them again later on in the afternoon because they have sprained their ankle, you can actually get paid for the two visits on the same day. Again, you need to report with modifier 59 or 25. I actually pulled the information for you straight off of CMS and where the information is. But again, it's not for the same thing. So again, if we see them for cough, cold, congestion in the morning and a sprained ankle in the afternoon, we're not seeing them for the same diagnosis that day, then we can get paid for two visits on that same day. And here's an example of that. With the 99213, we saw them for their cough and their cold for $175, and then that afternoon they came in with a sprained ankle and some other comorbidities. So wanted to provide you with that information as well. All right, so your influenza and pneumonia vaccines. And they need to be put on your shot log and submitted as part of your cost report. They are not to be submitted on the claim to Medicare. So here we have our two patients, Donald and Daisy Duck, and their data service and the information on there, which is their health information number or Medicare number and then the data service. Again, the people that prepare your cost reports would like to see your shot logs at the end. So make sure that you have that information that's provided. Hospice service is a hot topic sometimes because we have a lot of claims that will deny for that. So you can treat a patient for your non-hospice diagnosis. If you are treating that patient for a non-hospice diagnosis, the condition code that needs to be on your claim is 07. If the provider is treating for hospice-related diagnosis, the claim should then be billed to the hospice company or adjusted. Meaning you cannot take that claim because Medicare Part A denied that claim and file it to Medicare Part B to get paid. That patient being on hospice is covered under that hospice company. Again, if we have a patient that's being treated for or on hospice for congestive heart failure and we're seeing that patient for a cough or a cold, then again, that's a non-hospice diagnosis. We would put an 07 on our as a condition code on our claim and file that out to Medicare Part A. Your non-RHC services, of course, your hospital visits are billed to Medicare Part B. If you're providing DME, you should have a DME provider number and be following that, or filing that, excuse me. And then, of course, your Part D drugs are, we gave you a website that actually works out very well for a lot of our clinics where they can actually file those Part D drugs directly through here and get reimbursed through that process. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Janet.
Thank you, Shannon. I'm going to be talking about the ancillary services that are billed as non-RHC services. That would be our labs and all labs, to include our six basic required labs for our rural health clinic. I go into many places, and sometimes they're just forgotten. They're not billed at all, so they're eating that cost. The EKG tracings are another part of it that we have to bill to on the non-RHC side, which would be either to Medicare Part B for our independent clinics, or it will be through the hospital outpatient provider number for our provider-based clinics. Likewise, the X-ray technical component is billed to Part B for our independents and our through our hospital outpatient for our provider-based rural health clinics. The labs that are required to be performed in the rural health clinics are these six listed here, which most of us are, we should know what that list is. Those, again, can be billed to Medicare Part B or through the hospital setting if you're provider-based. So through our hospital outpatient provider number for our provider-based clinics, we are going to be sending all of our labs, to include the six basic required labs. But remember, the venipuncture is part of our office visit bundled services, so that would not be billed through the hospital provider number. The X-ray technical component, the EKG tracings, any Holter monitor technical components, and they're all billed to the our MAC on the 1500 on the UB04, excuse me, form for the hospital, and it'll be billed to Medicare Part B for our independent rural health clinics. Anything with a technical component must be billed in this manner. If you don't know if it has a professional and technical component, you need to get on the CMS website and go to the physician fee schedule lookup and look the code up and ask for all modifiers, and it will tell you if there's a 26 modifier, which is the professional component, or the technical component that would apply to that code. I just answered a question on the listserv earlier today with that information. For our independent rural health clinics on the Part B side, those same services are going to be sent to the MAC on your 1500 form, and you're paid at the Medicare Part B fee schedule. Our Incident 2 services. Incident 2 services must have direct supervision by the provider. They must be in your clinic, and they don't have to be in the same room. However, being in the hospital when attached to the clinic is not considered Incident 2. That's the reason that our regulation states that we cannot provide any services without a provider present, and that is in our rural health clinic. So being in the hospital, even though we're connected to the clinic, is not considered in the clinic. The only exception is our chronic care management services, that we do not have to have a provider in our clinic while we are performing chronic care management services. It's part of our provider services previously ordered. So an incident two would be the doctor ordered an injection over the next 3 days. That injection can be given on those 3 days if there is a provider in the building. It does not have to be the same provider. So that is an integral, though incidental, part of that previous visit. It's covered as part of that billable encounter, and it may be bundled with that previous encounter in order for us to get paid. These could include dressing changes, injections, suture removal, blood pressure monitoring. There's a numerous services that can be provided as incident two. At the very bottom there, it says Medicare and Medicaid, if your state requires, services should be billed under the provider that performed the service unless it is an incident two service. So if we have nurse practitioners and physicians physician's assistants providing services for Medicare, those need to be billed under those providers' NPI numbers within the rural health clinic claim. So services rendered on non-visit days, these are considered our Incident 2 services as well, and they can be combined on a claim with a visit within 30 days before or after that face-to-face visit. Incident 2 service is for the plan of treatment that has already been established, and it's never considered a separate visit, so it would not be billed separately to anybody, not including Part B. And we list only the date of service on our claim to include those Incident 2 services, regardless if they were done before that visit or after that face-to-face visit. Charges should reflect all services bundled on that CG line, and the added charges detail will be on the subsequent lines of your UB04. When added, the added reimbursement is 20% for copay of those added charges. So if you add $100, you're going to get $20 for that added charges that you've added to that claim. If you do not have a claim that you want to submit that with, and it's already, you have claims that have already been submitted, you can do an adjustment, which is a 717 type of bill. You would use a condition code of a D1. You'd have the ICN number in field locator 64 and remarks of changes in charges. Otherwise, those costs are shown on our cost report and they're claimed indirectly. You do not get separate payment through your cost report, but it affects your average cost on your cost report. This information can be found in the CMS 100-2 Internet Only Manual, Chapter 13, Section 120. Adjustments are bill type 717. I talked about that in the last slide. Any claim that is adjusted must be in the finalized status. Adjustments will appear as a debit or credit on future remittance advices. We encourage submitting them electronic. In fact, I think they're required to be. The exceptions, denied charges, and claims rejected as Medicare secondary payer. You cannot send those electronic at this time. And you do not send another new claim with a 711 bill type, or it will error out as a duplicate claim. The revenue code, some revenue code changes, added service lines, total charges changed, primary payer was incorrect. Those are all examples of adjustments that you could do through an adjustment claim. This is an example of an adjustment claim, and I've highlighted the areas that you're going to be changing with the condition code, the date of service, the 717 bill type. Make sure that you remember the ICN number and the DCN number of the paid claim, and then the remarks of changes to charges. Medicare corporate compliance, I always talk about a corporate compliance issue when I do a webinar. We need to make sure that we're getting our ABNs, advanced beneficiary notices, when appropriate. The new CMS R131 dated 3 of 2020 is the applicable ABN to be used. If you use the older one with an older date, it doesn't count. This would apply to any lab, EKG, X-ray that may not meet the covered diagnosis, and you cannot bill the patient if the claim is denied as non-covered without an ABN. You must keep a copy of the ABN, so make sure that you either keep them in the patient's files or in your business office file. And then, are we asking the Medicare secondary payer questions every time that patient comes in for a visit? That's very important. Some of the internet websites of interest are the National Association of Rural Health Clinics, which is very informative, the CMS.gov, and then the regulations and guidance. And there's a wealth of information on all of those websites.
So, hey, Janet, let me jump in real quick.
Yeah.
For those of you, it's a little late now, but for those of you who have the outdated slides, if you go back to RHI Hub and click on the link again, the new updated slides are now there. So you'll have all of this, kind of the second half.
Thank you, Nathan.
But, yeah.
So I guess at this point, we are ready to take any questions that anybody may have.
So we'll get the chat box available for folks to send their questions in via the chat. Operator, do you want to give the instructions for those who wish to submit a question via the phone?
Yes, thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one. Be sure to unmute your phone and record your name clearly. Again, star and one with any questions. One moment.
And I'm not sure. I think we'll get the chat box functionality working here shortly. I don't see it on my computer yet.
Hi, Nathan. It's Joaquina. We are working on getting that chat box up for folks.
Okay. Okay. Operator,
we do have some questions on the phone. Our first one comes from Brittany. You may go ahead.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi, how are you? My question is really simple. You said that we could go back to the...
Hold on. You got to say where you're from.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Brittany, and I'm from Missouri.
Okay. Hi, Brittany. What's your question?
My question is just what... you had said we could go back to the RH to get the link, but I don't know what the RH is.
RHI Hub. RHI Hub. That will be the... that's the resource. It has a lot of different resources, but if you go to RHI Hub, stands for Rural Health Information Hub, and then you search in the top right for RHC Technical Assistance, you'll see the slides listed there or for you to download that we use today.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Okay, the actual website for that is ruralhealthinfo.org.
Yes.
Okay, our next question comes from Andrea. If you can please state the state you're in, please.
Hi, my name's Andrea, and I'm from Kentucky.
Hi, Andrea. Go ahead.
I'm having a question about whenever we bill for biopsy codes like 56605 through Part A, they get denied for the incorrect revenue code. Are those something that would have to be billed to Part B?
They should be being billed with a 521 revenue code.
Yeah, that is what we're submitting it with. And we're keying those directly into DEE.
Now, is that, I don't think so. Is that 56, whatever you said, code, the testing of it?
56605 is what we usually bill with, and it's just the biopsy.
So that's your professional code, professional service? Because, you know, some of course, our CPT codes break down to, you know, the professional and technical. So you want to make sure that the professional is what's actually going across. But I'm actually going to forward the slides and provide, we have our contact information. So I'll flip it back and forth. But this is my contact information. So if you want to send some of these questions directly to us, we can help you work through those as well. And then here's Janet's contact information as well.
Okay.
So without having a CPT book right here with me, I can't really pull that up.
Right.
So I apologize.
Right. Understandable. Okay, thank you.
All right. We'll take some of the questions in the chat box now. The first one is from Digna. She's from South Dakota, and her question is in regards to rural health provider-based clinics, who should be billing EKG reads, the hospital Part A?
Depends on who's reading that EKG. If the provider in the rural health clinic is reading that EKG, then it would be billed in the clinic through the rural health clinic with him as the provider with that visit that he saw, that face-to-face visit. If they are reading them in the hospital, then it would be billed at the through the hospital side. Now, if they have a company that reads them and then the hospital either bills for that through that company or the company bills it, then there would be nothing billed through the rural health clinic.
Hey, Janet, she just typed in. It says it's being read by another facility that she contracts out to.
Then that facility should be billing them unless you have them as part, even though you do have them as part of the, your contract, you would have to have reassignment of payments coming to you that you would bill for them, basically. But since they are not your rural health clinic provider, you would not be billing them on your claim.
All right. And we'll do one more on the chat box. Jan O asks, can you shed some light on billing covered and non-covered services performed at the same data service?
Well, in the Medicare internet-only manuals, and I always have a bleep of this on any of my other slides, and I don't have it on this one, but it states that if any services provided in your rural health clinic are non-covered, but you've got covered services on that same date, they're all considered covered. So with that said, it should be able to be billed on our claim with all of our covered services. However, these claims, and it's because we're on a per diem payment method, and with that said, I know that there's claims that go through with covered and non-covered services on the claim, and the claims are just getting denied. I've talked to Bill about this. I think Bill's talked to CMS about this, and it is an issue. So with that said, the problem is you can't send two claims in one day for the covered services and the non-covered services and have them go through. So that's a problem, and I honestly don't know how to get around it. Shannon, do you have any ideas on that one?
No, I agree with what you said. I think one of the things that we see a lot of time is B12 shots, and again, those are, of course, only covered for certain conditions. I agree that your ABNs are going to be where you come into. If you were to try to file two claims separately that day, they're going to just hit against each other. So, again, I think non-covered, if we truly know they're non-covered and we know the insurance is not going to cover it, then your best bet is an ABN and, you know, sending that over to the patient responsibility.
All right. Thank you, guys. Operator, can we take another question from the phone?
Certainly. Our next question comes from Jim Miller. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'm calling from Indiana. I was just kind of curious if this group is aware that some of the billing difficulties that state Medicaid programs change or require for reporting for RHC services, specifically in our state. They do not recognize the UB04 format. They use the CMS 1500. They have a whole different billing mechanism, itemizing the services under a TXPIX code of T1015 and then zero out the charges. And I guess the question I have is, under HIPAA, you were trying to standardize, or back the philosophy under HIPAA was to standardize all these billing practices where, in fact, state Medicaid programs, at least in Indiana, maybe other states, do not simplify this billing process. So I just want to know if this is true in other states and possibly what type of actions could be done both at the state and local level to try, or at the national level to try to balance this out to make it a more equitable and a more HIPAA-like billing format.
So in South Carolina, we're also required to bill the exact same way that you just said with the T1015 code, and it's still each state Medicaid is a tad bit different, and, you know, what I do here in South Carolina may be somewhat similar to what you do there. Pennsylvania is completely different. I'm sure other states, Janet, that you're in are completely different as well, which is why when we do a lot of these calls, we're very specific about talking about just Medicare. You should have, just like I work for a state office of rural health, you should have a state office of rural health in your state that may have contacts with Medicaid agencies to kind of help you through that process, which we encourage is that you bill the same regardless of your carrier. And then there's a lot of custom rules and edits that are placed on the back end on the clearinghouse. So I'll file the claim the same way as a Medicare claim in a sense to Medicaid, and then the rules are changed on the back end through the clearinghouse. But again, with it being Medicaid, I'll be glad to have that conversation offline. So if we can talk through that, should you wish to.
I'm the chairman of the State Uniform Billing Committee in Indiana, and I know that the National Uniform Billing Committee has CMS as a major player sitting at the table. I would think that it's some respect to the RHC groups or anybody who has to bill separate or different than standard practices ought to have some influence through the National Uniform Billing Committee. But here we are, 13 years later, and it really hasn't changed.
And Nathan, that might be something that y'all want to address on the national level.
Okay. I just wanted to see if, in fact, if this has been addressed by this group in the past. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for that feedback. We can talk about reaching out to the NUBC and seeing what, possibility or potential there is to kind of try to get things more aligned between Medicare and Medicaid. I'm going to need more info on what you think the pain points are and whatnot. So hopefully you have myself and Bruce in there. It's not listening, but Bill is bf@nahc.org, and my email is bobugh@capitalassociates.com. So send us an email if you look into that. Operator, do you have
Nathan? I'm sorry.
You're breaking up.
Sorry, Nathan, can I jump in? Hi, everyone. This is Joaquina Scott with the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy. And just in another quick response to the previous caller, there are also within CMS the regional rural coordinators for each of the different regions within CMS. And they're also a good resource to kind of follow up with when you have some of these state-related issues. And if you kind of just do a Google search on CMS regional rural coordinators, you'll be able to find that list of coordinators for your particular state. So I encourage you to maybe use them as a resource as well, too.
Operator, do we have a call online?
Yes, we have another question from Janice. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Janice from Cadillac, Michigan. For our rural health claims, are UBs processed through National Government Services Medicare, NGS Medicare? And we're currently, since 8-1 of 2017, unable to report the T1015 procedure code for Medicare crossovers to Medicaid, so we're unable to get our PPS rate without sending claim adjustments to Medicaid. And I was wondering, we've asked NGS Medicare to escalate this, and they act like we're the only rural health clinic in Michigan that's ever had this issue. And I was hoping somebody else on the line could help me escalate this, because we have so many rural health clinics, we are backing up on claims for this issue.
Okay, let me make sure I understand completely what you were, what you're asking, is that when you submitted the claim over to NGS, whether it's a 99213 that you're submitting, mm-hmm. in order for you to submit that over to secondary for Medicaid and transition that over to a T1015, that's where the problem is? Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, our instruction, which is given to us through online information from Medicaid provider support and their new 1015, T1015 code starting in August the 1st of 2017, was that Medicare requires the T1015 with a penny line to be reported through to Medicare. And so we tried to send several claims through to Medicare, and they all front-end rejected. And so we worked with Medicare NGS, and they said they'd never heard of this. We also have rural health clinics that use WPS Medicare, and they're going through fine. And so they don't have any issues with it. And we've presented it to NGS Medicare the same way. WPS processes the T1015 with a penny. We just want you to just roll it through, deny it. It's just a dummy code because it has to be reported to Medicaid for crossovers. And they said they never heard of it. They've never.
So, Nathan, I'm thinking that that's something, again, that may need to be taken up by you as well.
Yeah, just to, I'll repeat my email. bauginn@capitalassociates.com, and that's spelled CAPITOLAssociates.com. And hopefully you've already gotten an email from me. If you're on the listserv, you definitely have. That's something that Bill and I can look into. We can kind of try to put pressure on the MAC to fix issues. We had a problem with Cahaba not teaching folks about the CG modifier, and they were denying folks claims and saying that, oh, it was just something that would be fixed and that they didn't have to do anything. Well, that was the incorrect reason. The reason the claims were being denied is because there's no CG modifier. So we were able to get involved with that and eventually fix that. So Cahaba went back and, you know, had to educate all the clinics that were billing Cahaba about the CG modifier. So we can do something like that for NGS and say, hey, you guys aren't recognizing that these clinics have to do this per the Medicaid instructions, and these claims need to be processed the way WPS processes them, and they cannot deny that you would. So that's something that we're going to have to elevate within the NGS apparatus. Feel free to get
Nathan, you're breaking up.
Right. This is Janice. I just wanted to say, can we put Nathan's contact information up on the screen so we can see it, because it is really hard to understand all of what you say, Nathan, but what I do understand is I appreciate you and need you as an advocate, because August 1st of 2018 will be here like tomorrow for me based on the amount of claims I have backed up and the money our companies or practices are, you know, just not getting because of this issue. So I definitely.
Okay, I'm sorry I'm breaking up. I just put my email into the chat box.
All
right.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah, just send me an email and we'll definitely look into that. Shannon, since I'm breaking up, do you want to just read the questions?
Sure, I'll be glad to.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'll take some from the chat box.
Chris Loy is the last one.
Yeah, I'm trying to go all the way back up. Okay, I think, so Chris Loy, how do you appropriately bill for a medically necessary E&M and a non-covered service at the same visit? I think we kind of discussed that, Janet, just a second ago with Jan O's question was very similar regarding ABNs and then processing those claims back through that way as well. And I'll keep looking to see if Chris replies with some additional information. Okay, so Stephanie Graham, Stephanie from Kentucky, when allergy med is sent to the clinic and we inject, what can we charge for that? So, Stephanie, what Janet was referring to before is the 30-day rule in such a sense is that if you have an office visit with that patient, so a medically necessary office visit, within 30 days before or 30 days after you give that allergy med, then that charge for that allergy med time can be added into that visit. Janet, do you want to talk a little bit through that?
Yeah, and that would be considered an incident to service. And if you have a visit that you can put with it, that injection with in the next coming 30 days, then you can do it then. You may, if you're going to be tracking those, you can adjust a claim that's already been paid and add those charges to it as well.
Okay. I'll take like two more off the chat box and then we'll ask the operator if she has any other. So Michelle is asking if, again, the presentation. So it's also in the file share box on the bottom of the screen. In addition, it's on the Rural Health Information Hub. And it's also the link has been put into the chat box as well. So hopefully y'all are seeing that. And then Tina Adams is asking about the regulations for the Medicare questionnaires and the regulations for MSP for rural health clinics. Janet, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, the rules are within, basically it's any clinic setting, that the MSP questions must be asked to all Medicare patients, regardless if you know the answers or not, you have to ask the questions. The Medicare patient has nothing to sign, but the questions must be asked. And what was the other part of that?
She's asking, I think, where she can get that information. It's available on her different Macs, so.
Okay, yeah, and you can go to the CMS.gov website and just put in Medicare secondary payer, and you'll get all of that information.
Great. Operator, do we have any other calls?
Yes, our next question comes from Renee. Renee Barnes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm calling from Louisiana. My question was about the adjustment of the MSP claims.
Of the what claims? I can barely hear you.
My question was about the adjustment of the MSP claims.
If it's a Medicare secondary payer claim, any adjustment has to be done by paper. You can send in a Medicare secondary payer claim electronically, but you cannot adjust them electronically.
Correct.
Okay.
You'd actually have to submit that adjustment claim. You'd actually have to submit that hard copy, unfortunately. They don't allow you to adjust a Medicare secondary claim electronically.
Okay. On the incident too, like if a patient came in for an office visit today,
I can't even.
Ma'am, we're having a really hard time hearing you. I can hear something about incident two, but that's all I could hear. I apologize.
Okay. If a patient came in for an office visit and 2 or 3 days later he came in for an injection and we want to bundle that, on that injection charge, do we put the date that he actually came in, or we put the date that he came in on the office visit?
The only date that you use on the claim is the date of the face-to-face visit.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And just so everyone knows, we can go till 3:15, so we can take questions for about 15 more minutes, but we do have a hard stop at 3:15.
Okay.
Great. So, operator, do we have any other calls? We'll take another one from the phone.
Yes, we have another question from Wendy McLennan. Go ahead.
So, I'm from South Carolina, and we are establishing a new rural health clinic. It'll be a provider-based rural health clinic. And I just need to understand for my, and this is for South Carolina Medicaid, and I know, you know, this is more national, but this is just a call. I think it'll be generic enough that you could answer. I'm going to bill my T1015 on my 1500, and I understand I'm going to bill that under my rural health numbers. But for my labs that I'm going to bill under my other numbers, I just need to know what place of service code do I bill on the lab. So I know I'm going to bill 72 on the T1015 claim, but for my labs, what place of service code would I bill on that claim?
Okay, so I've put my information up for you. Since you're in my state, I can actually help you with that. But what you're going to do is you're going to bill that under your group practice numbers from Medicaid, and you're going to bill that with a place of service 11. And we can talk through that information offline. And my contact information I put back up on the screen for you. So feel free to reach out, and we can go from there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I'm going to take a few more off of the chat. And let's see. We have a lot of questions about the MSP, so hopefully we've answered a lot of those for you. Let's see. How do we get the F? I'm sorry?
Shannon, there's a one on the chat line about the CPT code 93922 was denied for incorrect revenue code. That's the one that I put out on the listserv earlier today, an answer to. And
yep.
that's a code that has both a technical component and a professional component. So the professional component that you're putting on the rural health clinic claim has to have a 26 modifier on it, or they think it's the entire code. And it would be a 521 revenue code on our rural health clinic claim.
Perfect. Thank you. It looks like Debbie's asking, we had a patient denied for COB with Medicare and patient updated information with Medicare. Can this be submitted with bill type 717?
If it's a denied claim and you may have to go in and cancel that claim first and then submit it again. A cancel claim is the same requirements as an adjustment, only it's a 718 bill type. You have to have a condition code in there. I don't remember what it is. It's a D code. And then you would put the ICN number in that field locator 64 again. And then I would always just put a remark in the remark section, please cancel due to incorrect information or something like that. And then let it cancel and then submit a brand new claim.
And then do you also want to address actually how they can get the system? So you just were talking about how they can actually go in and adjust that claim. That's one of the next questions, is how do you actually get the FISS system?
Okay. That would be through the direct data entry system, and each of your Medicare payers on their websites will have an area that you can go to. It's probably the EDI area that you can sign up to get access to that direct data entry, and there's papers that you have to fill out. You have a login and a password, and that password has to be changed every 30 days. There has to be a connectivity company that you work through to get to that DDE. The one that I use, and I'm not saying that that's the only one out there, but it's the only one that I know because I use it, is the Ability. It's called ABILITY, Ability Network. And so you can contact them for the connectivity portion to get access to that direct data entry, or DDE is what I call it. And then on that DDE system, it's going to look very old because it's going to look like the old DOS system on a computer. And there's one section, it's called corrections. That's where you would go to make any corrections on claims as well as make any adjustments or canceling claims. It's very easy on the DDE file. If you have any problems with it, with any claim, you can be calling the people at your MAC on the customer service line and be talking to them and actually looking at what they're looking at so that you know what you may need to fix or may need to change.
Perfect. So why don't we take one more off of the chat and then we'll go back to the phone lines. So I have Tamara. We recently started billing for visiting specialists in our RHC regarding two visits on the same day. If our primary care provider sees a patient for a complaint and then refers the patient to one of the specialists who happens to be here the same day, would this be considered additional treatment and therefore separately billable?
It's going to depend. And it's going to be depending on, are those specialists under your tax ID and a part of your rural health clinic?
So it appears they are, that she's saying that it's actually for visiting specialists in our RHC, but if it's for the same exact condition, then I don't see that being a
it's not a separate business.
Separately billable.
No, it is not. Any providers within your clinic on the same date of service are all combined into one rural health clinic visit for that date of service. And you can find that in the Chapter 13 for the rural health clinic benefit manual.
Perfect.
I don't remember which section, but I know it's in there.
Operator, do we have any additional calls?
Yes, we have another question from Carla. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Carla from Iowa. My question is in regards to Incident 2. Does it also include laboratory and x-ray services that are provided a day or two after the initial encounter?
The lab services are billed to either Part B or through your hospital, so that's really not considered an Incident 2 service for our rural health clinic billing
side. Can I include the venipuncture then in the encounter?
The venipuncture, then yes, you could. That could be a Incident 2 service. I want to caution everybody, if you're going to track every one of those small items as an Incident 2 service to put on claims, it's going to drive you nuts. I think you're going to have to, it's going to depend on what you're doing and what you're providing as Incident 2 to track and either bundle with claims that haven't happened or adjust claims that have happened. The professional portion of the reading of the x-ray, that could go on the visit that they ordered that x-ray. So yes, it could be a bundled service within a past claim or a future claim coming up.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Operator, can we take another call?
Yes, we have another question from Todd. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is on HCC codes. We have providers in RHCs and F2HCs who are still qualifying for MACRA, so they're interested in obviously the risk adjustment for the HCC codes that are provided with the HCC scoring. But the question is more on an operational workflow. Is there any benefit on the clinic visits within the normal, either freestanding or provider-based RHC to be adding those HCC codes?
Okay, so I think you're talking about, so as part of MACRA and MIPS, you know, rural health clinics, again, have to be, if they have over 30,000 in charges and more than 100 Medicare beneficiaries, then they should be submitting under MACRA and MIPS.
And now in 2018, it's actually 90,000 and 200.
Correct. For 2018, you know, those change. But if you're talking about the submission is getting ready to happen in March, if you haven't already done it.
Yep.
So with that, you know, rural health clinics can go ahead and submit. You know, it's not a requirement if you meet the low volume threshold, but it is something that you can actually go ahead and do. We would encourage, as part of making sure that, you know, quality codes and quality initiatives, if you have the capability to do that, it doesn't hurt you to go ahead and submit that information. There's not really a benefit per se, because, again, rural health clinics, for if they're low volume, they're exempt from submitting anyway.
Perfect. So there's no other program or quality initiative that impacts the RHCs, especially those who meet the low volume thresholds, that would quote-unquote require the HCC?
Not unless you're part of an ACO or not on the Medicare side. You know, with the HEDIS measures for your Medicaid payers and or other commercial payers, there would be your additional benefits there, because a lot of times those will pay outside of Medicare and, you know, pay a different per member per month or something like that, but not on the Medicare side.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Shannon, can I just jump in too quick for clarification that for RHCs, we're talking about the providers if they're billing on Part B out for services outside of the rural health clinic service.
Correct. Thank you.
Correct.
We'll know that.
Yes.
RHCs are exempt. So we're talking about those that are billing for services outside of the RHC and FQHC services.
And you touched on it. Why this is such an interesting thing for many of our providers is, even if they do meet the low volume threshold, they still have some Part B billing, and then the critical access hospital, which happens to employ all the providers and they bill everything under the central TIN, wants to do group reporting. That automatically brings those providers in, even though previously, if they would have chosen to report as an individual, they would be excluded. But the second the TIN, the billing TIN, moves to do group reporting, you have to include those providers. And that's where I think the confusion is. It's like, well, again, 99% of their services are being done under Rural Health Clinic Part A, therefore it's not going out through Part B. So is it really going to be that big of a deal if those providers weren't being captured? And I wasn't aware if there were other programs. You bring up a good point about joining an ACO that would really be driving the clinic manager to change their workflow to capture that RHC with HCC codes.
Perfect. Yeah,
I think you captured it completely. Yeah.
Yes. Is that if they're going to be submitting as a group, then those 10 or those NPI numbers are associated with that 10, and they're going to have to be submitting anyway as part of that group attestation. And especially depending on which way you're choosing to submit. I think you've got it. You answered the same thing.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Of course.
All right. I think I might have, we might have to cut it off there, Shannon.
Okay. That's what I was about to ask you.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for calling in. Hopefully you guys can hear me. I want to thank everyone for joining our call today, especially our speakers, Shannon and Janet, for their presentations, and the Office of Rural Health Policy for sponsoring this TA series. Again, please encourage others who may be interested to register for the RHC Technical Assistance Series. In addition, we welcome you to email us with your thoughts and suggestions for future call topics at bf@narhc.org, and be sure to put RHC TA topic in the subject line. We anticipate scheduling the next RHC Technical Assistance call in the next month or so, and a notice will be sent by email to those who have registered for the call series with the details on the next call. With that, thank you for your participation, and that concludes today's call.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you.